Welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Take control of your camera and develop the skills necessary to improve and master your photography. Join me, Dermot O'Donovan, John Myler and Darren J. Spoonley as they cut through the sometimes confusing jargon of photography to help you find your own style and decide what's best for you. A mix of educational, inspirational, honest and sometimes controversial content delivered in a unique, fun way from three of Ireland's talented photographers. Let's go!
Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Irish Photography Podcast. And this week, I'm Darren, I'm hosting the show. I'm delighted to be back after a two-week hiatus. How are you getting on, guys?
How's it going, buddy?
Great, how are you?
I'm good now, good. Welcome back. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, we'll go through a couple of items here, actually. Quite excited by it. How are you, Dad?
Ah, fantastic. I know we were supposed to record last night, guys, but sorry, I kind of fell asleep at the computer, you know, so... my apologies to the late recording. So, but other than that, I was kind of burnt out. I was kind of burning the candle at both ends. So today I feel a bit more refreshed and a bit more chirpy, so to speak.
I'm happy to hear that. Actually, would have been better off if we didn't have you last night. So could you be giving out about everything more than you normally give out about everything?
Hey, Dermot, don't feel too bad about it because I'm very likely to fall asleep here. No reflection on you, Darren.
That's okay. That's okay. Sorry, so anyway, onwards, right? So there's a couple of things I want to talk with you guys tonight. You know, you were asking me and you mentioned it there last week about my trip to the US. So I want to kind of go through that and give you my thoughts on that. And then I've also got an interesting topic. It was actually given to me by Rodney O'Callaghan, so it's an interesting one for us to discuss, I think. And the moment he said it to me, I knew that it would be a good topic, and we'll talk about it as well in the moment in more detail, but it's about photography. Is it a hobby, is it a passion, or is it an obsession? So I think that could be a one that would get, a lot of people thinking, and us thinking as well, I suppose. And then I've got the VSP, but I'll reveal that when we get to that, I suppose, really. So we'll kick off with the first topic here, which is a small bit of background in regards to where I've been for the last 2 weeks, because it's been something that I really, really enjoyed. And I went to the US, I went to the States. So every year to 2 years, I suppose, in recent years, because of the kids and such like that, we go over. My wife is from Wisconsin, so we go to Wisconsin. But this year, I was very lucky in a way, because we managed to plan it to get over there for the autumn, or the fall, as you know it's called in the US. And before I even left here, I was checking on a thing called the Fall Color Report, which is brilliant. And it's done by the Wisconsin Travel Association or Authority. But they give an update on a daily basis based on what people, I suppose, write into them and letting them know what the colors are like in their area. So, you know, Wisconsin is a big state. There's a number of different counties within that. And it was mad to look at it, because before I went, it was telling me that in week three, the areas I wanted to go to would be in peak. And it was actually spot on, to be honest with you. It was changing on a daily basis. And when I got over there, the area that I first went to was actually saying it was at peak. So I was really, really happy in regards to that. But in reality, then it was slightly off, because the first day I arrived, would you believe, it snowed.
It snowed.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool, because I wasn't expecting it. And, you know, there was a small bit of colour left in the leaves, like, but, you know, there wasn't overly colour. But then to get the snow there, so, of course, I went straight out with the camera and had to get a couple of photos of it. But it was pretty cool, I suppose, really, because there was corn still in the fields. And the corn is a summer plant. And to see that covered in snow.
Seasons are just so messed up. Like.
It just goes to show you about global warming, and it is a real thing. Donald Trump thinks it's fake, but still, it is a real thing, and it is affecting the world. So like you said, a summer vegetable, corn is vegetable, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you have snow. Like, the world is changing right before our very own eyes, and I think we're neglecting that. But sorry, I'm getting way off topic here. But please do continue, Darren.
It was very philosophical there. That was good.
Darren, can I cut in there for a sec before you go on? You were saying there about the Wisconsin color change and the authorities notifying.
Yeah.
That's such a great idea. I mean, like, I never heard that before. That's just top class. And the reason I say that is, Dodd, you'd know, like, the Clare Glens is a hard place to get at the right time in autumn.
Yes.
You know, I've often gone down there in autumn and you think you're going to get loads of color and it's still green. But if you're able to go on an app or something to see the area that you want to visit, especially if you're going to drive an hour to the area, what kind of colour it is, that or the foliage is like. That's somebody thinking outside the box now, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, really, but really good. I think, you know, the one thing is that Wisconsin is huge. So, you know, you could take, for argument's sake, you an hour to get somewhere close by here would be, you'd still be in the same county in certain areas, you know. So it's cool, it's cool in that way. But like, I went out in, when I first arrived, I'd go out in the morning because I wasn't able to get up for dawn, because obviously I was with the family. So I'd get up in the morning and I'd go get some morning light and I'd stay local and such like that. And it was really kind of, like I say, a mixture between brown leaves or empty leaves, but a massive amount of flooding, would you believe? So there was huge amounts of rain before it. So areas that I would look at a map and I'd want to go shoot, I couldn't get there because the roads were closed from the flooding.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
But you know what? From a photography point of view, what it really did do was it presented me then with some scenes that wouldn't normally be there because there was water.
That's unreal. Mm. Yeah. So it was really a challenge for you going over this time based on what you thought was going to be when you get there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you really have to adjust.
Yeah, and you see, the thing about it was is that, like, I was staying in two different places there. So I was going to the second place, which was further north. And there was this park that I'd looked at. And it was a beautiful kind of pathways going through the park. But when I went to look up to the park, all the trees were bare. So I was gutted. I was gutted. So I was thinking, okay, I'm after missing this now, you know. You'd see small pockets of trees with a bit of colour, but most of the trees that had colour, would you believe, that were in people's gardens. So you couldn't take a photograph of a tree in somebody's garden, you know. But
you can, you just be calling it peeping Tom.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I wouldn't want to do it in the US, you know. You'd probably get arrested for less.
You'd be shot.
Yeah, you probably would be shot, yeah. So what I then said was, you know what, there's a place that I'd wanted to go to. I spoke about it actually a couple of weeks back when we were talking about the three favourite photos. And it was a place up in Door County. And like, it's around three and a half hour drive, maybe 4 hour drive to get there. And I was looking at the fall colour report and it said it was peak, but it also said the area that I was in was peak. So I was a small bit worried. But what I actually decided to do is a quick search on the internet, and I found a local photographer in the Door County area. His name is Luke Collins Photography, and I reached out to him, and then he was very quickly able to tell me exactly what it was, and it was actually in peak. It was beautiful. So I, you know, fair credit to him for letting me know, because when I got there, unbelievable.
Class.
It was the colors I was looking for from the moment that I went down to this. So when I say I go on to this, on the map of Wisconsin, Door County is like a finger that sticks out on the top right. And the mainland, if you want to call it that, because the finger that sticks out goes right into Lake Michigan, which is a big, big, big lake. I mean, like, to kind of give you an idea on size, it probably takes around half an hour to fly across it in the jet when we're coming in to land in Chicago.
Wow.
And it goes right from Chicago all the way up to the top of Wisconsin. Like, it's huge, you know. Some of the lakes over
like
there
the
are
Irish
really
sea.
Big. Yeah, to a certain extent, yeah.
Make it feel so small.
Actually, yeah. I mean, look, the US is huge in comparison to here, like, you know. But from the moment I got onto it anyway, it was unbelievable. So I went and visited that road, that Highway 42, and that was incredible, but also incredibly hard to shoot, because in the summertime, when I was there last time in the summertime, the roads were busy enough. But because it was peak, and fall is something that everybody loves, everybody goes to like the colours, the amount of cars that were driving up and down the road, it felt like you, John, at the Dark Ages.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But except it wasn't people, it was cars. So for me to take the shot, I had to go onto the middle of the road. So I had to time it really in between traffic that was coming along. And needless to say, I suppose there was more cars there than I thought, you know. But I think I got the shot I was looking for. And it was ridiculously windy as well. So that was one thing actually I noticed. There was one point I was flying the drone and the wind was so strong that I was telling it come back. And it wasn't moving back at all.
If I didn't
tell it come back, it was actually drifting away.
And come here, Darren. Just so the listeners know, and for me to know, because I do plan to get to the States in the next year or two. You brought your drone and all your camera equipment, yeah?
Yeah.
So what was the story with the airport? And I know America are big, the TSA, isn't that what it's called? They're big on security and all that.
Yeah.
So was there any issue getting your drone and your camera equipment into the country?
Zero.
Happy days.
It's actually a good point, Dad, because when I was flying out of Dublin, if you fly to the US from Dublin, you actually go through baggage control twice. So you go through the Irish level of baggage control, which is the normal one you go through in Terminal 2. And then when you go down to the US pre-clearance, you have to go through a secondary baggage control. Okay. And that's run by the US so that they get their second opportunity to check to make sure that nothing is coming onto the US soil. Because it's a full immigration
you're out of point, the continent. Let's just say. Yeah.
Yeah, effectively, yeah. I mean, when you're on that ground, you're on US ground, soil. You're still on Irish soil, but yeah. You're on this ground, like, yeah, yeah. But you go through a secondary test in regards to that. And all I did when I was going up and each time is, you know, it's funny because when you're going through on the plane, you know, they tell you take out iPads, take out laptops and turn them on and everything else, you know, and all electronic equipment must be turned on. So I was like, okay, this is going to be fun. So I put the bag up anyway and... any liquids or gels? No. Okay. Any laptop or iPad? No, I've no laptop or iPad, but everything in there is electronic. It's all camera gear. And they look at you kind of funny and, okay, right, grand. And then they tell the person, to be honest with you, that's looking at it. But I did see it all right on the screen and, Jesus, my God, it was just electronics when you look at the whole bag. I'm surprised, like, you know what I mean? But yeah, no problem at all, and no problem over there either, Dad, and no problem getting it back as well. So
that's good to know.
Not generally straightforward, you know, but I wasn't even going to bring the drone because I was thinking, just from the whole point of view, in the US the laws are pretty strict as well for where you can fly the drone. You can't fly the drone in any state parks or any national parks, and you can't fly the drone in any areas that have got airports nearby, and a lot of places have airports nearby. So
yeah,
I very nearly didn't bring it, but I did bring it in the end. And anyway, so to go back to that point, which was, I was on that Highway 42, and I was sending the drone up to get some shots, but like I say, it was ridiculously windy. I kicked it into sport because it was the only way for me to get it back. And when it was coming back in sport, it was going 5 kilometres an hour.
My legs would be wobbling. My legs would be wobbling. Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually bringing it sideways, Dad, to kind of avoid the wind, you know.
Just for our listeners there, they're probably wondering what kind of drone you had with you.
It's the Mavic Air. Not the Mavic Air. What have I got? That's the one you
Mavic
lost.
Pro.
Mavic Pro. Mavic Pro. Yeah, the original Mavic Pro. Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me about that, buddy, because I totally forgot and I just really needed to be reminded. So thank you.
I know there's a Phantom 4 Obion or Obitron or whatever the pronunciation of it is for sale going cheap if you want to buy it.
How much?
I don't know. I'll find out. Gas!
I shouldn't have said how much.
But yeah,
my drone is still for sale, Dad. Still here, lovely Phantom 4 Pro.
I need lot of numbers to buy that off you, John. Genie Mac. I'm on its lagging. If I was to buy another drone, I think I'm going to go back to exactly the drone that I lost. I loved it. That was the Mavic Air. I know your drone is much better from a technical point of view and from a photography point of view. I just loved the neatness and the tidiness and the... what's that word for moving stuff? Logistically, way better. Mm. But don't get me wrong, the Phantom 4 Pro, top notch. I wouldn't mind having the two of them. You know.
Sorry, Darren. We were just getting a bit gassy there.
I know, Dodge. I had to let him go off. You know what I mean? He's just, he'll have one by next week, I guarantee you. We've now planted the seed.
Yeah, yeah. I have been looking on adverts the last few weeks.
There you go.
Shut up, will you?
Right. So now
hang on. Before you go away from the road, what lens did you use? Because you were talking before you went over, I think you were saying you're going to use a 70-200 to compress the image.
Yeah, right? Yeah, 70-200.
Yeah, cool. Look forward to seeing that shot.
Yeah, it was actually tough to get it, but I think I got it. You know, it was tough to get. But anyway, I suppose after that then, because I was in peak, I was just like a kid. I was like a child in the playground because everywhere you looked, it was just amazing colours. And when you see the drone footage and stuff like that that I got, you can see the blanket of colours that was there. It was unbelievable. But when I was driving around roads as well, and one thing actually I don't like, if I'm being honest with you, about in the States is that any kind of nice areas by a lake or by the waterfront or anything like that, it's always on somebody's private property. So it's very difficult to be able to get to areas that you want to be able to shoot. So I was just driving around these roads, which were beautiful roads, and it's just in a complete covering or a blanket of yellow. Even the light itself was yellow. So I was just taking video footage while I was driving on the road, stopping every so often and seeing different things, but I couldn't go get to take photos because you might see a big bright red tree and it's in somebody's land. So I couldn't go get the shot of it, you know. But I stumbled across one place there, actually. It was a woods. It was a yellow woods. Everything, even the light inside in it, everything was yellow. And I got some pretty cool photos there and unusual photos in regards to that. And then finally, I suppose, on that, when I was on that whole area, I went to a place called Europe Lake. That was incredible, actually, to be honest with you. There was loads of colours on the trees on the far side of the water. Now, the lake was one small bit of a boat launch I managed to find, which I could go to. Either side of the boat launch, actually, 10 feet to the left, 10 feet to the right, was private property, so you couldn't actually go on it. But there was lovely colours there. The water was very rough because it was very windy, like I said, but it was amazing because I much prefer to shoot with the sun as opposed to against the sun. So from a sunset point of view, I much prefer to shoot east because you're not dealing with the harsh light, but the light of the sun is actually lighting up the subject. And that's exactly what I wanted to do there. So I was facing east at the sunset, looking across at all these colourful trees, and exactly what I wanted to happen happened. So just before the sun went down, I got a burst of direct light and it just lit the whole lot of those trees up in a glow. And it was just amazing, lovely. You know? Yeah. So yeah, that was really nice. And then I spent the night there, got up early in the morning to go back to a place that I wanted to go to. It was a mad place, actually. It's on Sturgeon Bay. It's called Sturgeon Lighthouse. But you walk down the pathway to the lighthouse and there's a line halfway along the pathway. One side says public, the other side says that you can't go there because it's private. And the reason why it's private is because it's the US Marine Naval Defense Base or something like that, Homeland Security or something. So you go down, I wanted to go take these photos, and I'm walking down in the dark, and I know that the line was there, but I didn't want to make sure that I didn't walk across it, you know. But that was a cool place to get photos. And then I went, I suppose, to be honest with you, what finished up that first trip that I was at, the first day of it, is a park called Potawatomi Park. And that was incredible. There was a lake there. It was early in the morning after the sunrise. It was beautiful morning light, lovely, fresh, crisp air. And the water was completely flat. And I'm looking on this lake and there's this one small island in front of me. And it was beautiful. But it could have been ruined as well, because then early in the morning you get all these guys, which is these boat launches. Like, these guys roll up in their trucks, you know, they're an F-150 or a Ram or whatever, a Chevy something. Mm. And they're huge. And then they're just bringing in their boat and then, you know, driving down into the jetty, letting the boat off, and after going right into my perfectly still water. Ouch. So, you know, I couldn't say, hey, what are you doing? You know, I mean, look, they're there all the time. I was just taking photos. But I still think I got some nice shots in regards to that. But for that first trip of it, guys, I think that was the best that I had in regards to the colour, because that entire peninsula was unreal. Unreal. There was nothing I could, you know, say anything about it. And actually, one point there, when I was just shooting in that lake, I had a lovely composition of a kind of an island, a load of trees, and the water was going come some way flat or whatever. And next thing I look and I see this guy coming in. He was a kayaker, but it was in a pedaled kayaker. So okay. he was fishing and he was off out, and he come straight in through to the scene. So I just said, okay, I saw it, you know, I just keep pressing, taking the shots. But I actually think I got a nice shot of him in the water with the colour of the reflections and everything else, and him breaking the water with the front of the boat, you know.
Nice one.
So that was stunning. And I suppose the last part in that area then was up on the very, very top of it. Again, this is daytime, so it wasn't daytime, I suppose around 11 till around 12:30, so almost, you know, worst light time, let's just say. And I'm up on top of this place looking over the whole canopy, because I couldn't fly the drone, so I wanted to see what it was like down that area. But they had a place that you could just drive up to, and it was incredible, yeah. So kind of a lot of mixture of luck, I suppose, really, on the first trip of it, you know. But the beauty of it all, actually, for me, is that I vlogged every single part of it.
Oh, excellent. And you know what, Darren, you sound so... I just kind of set the scene in my head here. You took off from Dublin Airport, you checked your gear in, and you got over, and you went off and took all these beautiful photographs and the beautiful locations. You must have built up a serious amount of brownie points. Did you see the family when you're over there at all, or still over there? Did you come home without them? Or what's the crack?
Do you know what? It's a very, very good point. And it's something we probably discuss too when we get to the second topic as well today.
True.
You know? No. No, I mean, look, I was there for 2 weeks and I got away twice. That was the first time that I got away. So I got away in the around 12 o'clock on the first day and came back around 2 o'clock the second day. So I was gone for around 24 hours, but I kind of really packed a lot in, you know.
Yeah, you made the most of it. I'm only slagging you. Fair play to you.
Well, I mean, look, I was chasing the colours. I was chasing where the colours were. And because I was using that thing on a regular basis, I could kind of get an idea where it was. And actually, the second trip was more of a shorter trip. I didn't get much in because I had to do so much driving in relation to it, because I went off up north, which would made no sense really, because I was already north after coming back. But there was this old mill that I was looking for, and it was called the Dells Mill. And I had my heart set in getting a photo. But I was, when I was searching to get the photo of it, I was searching from a place called the Wisconsin Dells, which was about an hour and a half south of where I was based. But I thought this place was in the Wisconsin Dells, so, because it popped up. But when I was finally looking to where it was and I put it into the maps, it was sending me an hour and 41 minutes northwest, yeah. But I said, I saw it, I'd go for it. So I kind of spent more of my time driving that day, and I went up to this mill. It was stunning. And then after that, I went down to Wisconsin Dells. But there's only one major thing there, I suppose. One big highlight for me on that one was there was a place I was looking to take photographs of. It's called the Witch's Gulch. Strange
Witch's
name.
Gulch?
Gulch, yeah.
Darren, it's not as strange as the names we've been having lately while you're away. I can tell you that.
I know,
it's
yeah.
China Man's Hole and Tony's
Crack.
Tony's Crack and everything.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to this place, and this is the part that kind of, I suppose, persistence really, when you make a plan, try and stick to it, you know. And this been an interesting one for me was this place, the Witch's Gulch. I was calling it the Witch's Clutch for some reason, but I mispronounced it and everything on the vlog, I think. But anyway, when I went to look it up online, I saw there was a road, so I said, okay, and I did an old search, and I could see an old picture that you could get in there for $5. But then I started doing more research online, and I found that you couldn't get in from the roadway anymore. And the only way to get in there was through boats that would organize tours. So I contacted the boat company and asked them, was there any way for me to get in there? And they said, no, the only way to get in there is through us, and it's $30 a ticket. So I said, right, okay. And I mean, look, if I go in on the boat with them, it's going to be a stop. It's going to be 2 minutes in there. You're going to be other people there as well walking in the shot. I was like, ugh. I have no interest in that. I said, Asher, look, how hard can it be? So I drove down there basically blind. All I had was a point on the road. And I was driving down the road, and all of a sudden I came to road closed. And I said, oh, Jesus, damn it. So did a quick search, quick detour. I went off up and found the other entrance into the other side of the road. And I saw the entrance into the place, but it was big signs up, no trespassing and CCTV in operation and everything else. And I was like, oh, jeez, I'm not going to be able to get my shot. So, you know, in pure unbelievable style, you know, whatever look I gave, I see this fella over outside his house. I walk over to him, and he was an elderly gentleman. And I approached him, and I said, look, I am from Ireland. I'm a photographer. I'm here on vacation. I wanted to get a shot of the Witch's Gulch, or Gulch. I can't remember what I pronounced it at the time. And he kind of looked at me funny, you know. And he said, you're from Ireland? I said, yeah. He said, okay, 1 second. He called his wife, and then his wife said, oh, you're from Ireland. Oh, our daughter is in Ireland. You know, so that was great that they kind of took to me easily enough. And I told them the situation. And in fairness, they made a phone call to the people of the area and asked, could we go in? And they said, yeah, sure, no problem. And they were actually finished the boat tour, so I wouldn't have been able to get in anyway, which was mad. So they took me down into this place, and this place was mad. It's an old ravine, and like the whole reason I like the whole Wisconsin Dells is a lot of America is flat, and particularly in Wisconsin, is because from the Ice Age, when the glaciers came down, it flattened everything across the whole area. But there's certain zones there, which is called one area, which is called the Driftless Zone. So it's a word that the glacier didn't reach, so you're left all of these hills, all of these cuts, all this original rock, a lot of canyons and old small canyons as well that have been carved by the water. And underneath that you get a lot of caves as well, so it's kind of a mad area. And that's why I wanted to go there, because I saw photographs of it and it looked incredible. I saw the detail on the sides of it. It's millions of years old. So in fairness, they brought me in there and I was just chatting to them away. And then they said, okay, so you're okay to be here on your own? I went, yeah. So I got 2 hours, as long as I wanted, but I stayed in there for 2 hours on my Todd, and it was incredible. I really, really
Brilliant.
Loved it. Yeah, really, really loved it. So it was, you know, it was really good as well, because even all, in the different areas I've gone, and from a photography point of view, it was really challenging, you know.
That's what you want. Darren, I have a question for you there, and Dad, I apologise now. I'm probably going to lose you completely here. But you'll understand why now in a second.
Oh, sorry, I fell asleep there. Sorry.
No, because I'm going to
That's
mention
great,
the word
Dad. Thanks very much.
So, going to make the word planning, Darren. This is why I could lose Dodd.
Oh, God.
Yeah, go on, switch off there for a second. How much planning did you do before you left, Darren?
I did a lot of planning, but a lot of loose planning. And the reason for it is because I wasn't going to be 100% sure how the colours were going to be. I knew the time the sunrise and the sunsets were going to be. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get much sunrise and sunsets because of the family and everything else and the reason I was over there in the first place. But kind of had it loosely guided that it when I was going to be able to go, but I definitely knew where I wanted to go.
You had your locations planned before you left.
Yeah, so it all depended where. I mean, there was one other spot I wanted to go to. It was called Holy Hill, and there was a church up on top of a hill, and it's all surrounded by a number of different types of trees. And actually, something I must do is learn more about trees. I have to learn more about the different types of trees and everything else to know it, because when you really want to plan, and Dad is looking at us here funny, but when you really want to plan, you can know when different trees are going to go into colour, because some of them will go sooner, some of them will go later.
That place there, that holy place you talk about, sounds like it'd be class drone photograph. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, it would have been a phenomenal drone photograph. And I checked as well online with AirMap, and I was perfectly fine to be able to fly there. But I never ended up getting there because it had gone past peak already. But that would have been unbelievable, because the palette of colours on that hill. You know, the Lake Bled, you got that church in Slovenia. I don't know if you know it or not. But it's kind of like that kind of a spire coming out of the top of a hill covered in colourful trees. It'd be amazing, amazing. But I never got there because the colour would have been gone. But overall, it was just... Yeah, exactly. Overall, it was just phenomenal. Really, really enjoyed it. Really, really challenged me. And I missed now, as I said, like being on the podcast when I was there last week. So now that I'm back, you know, it's now time for me to start editing all that. I mean, I had 140 gig of footage and photos. So that's a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work between your photos and your... Oh, you're awake, Dad.
Yeah.
Did you hear something there, Darren? Oh, there he is.
I smelled food and it just got to me. So, Darren, you have 140 gigs of data. What I'd love to know from a technical point of view is, did you back up your files or did you shoot in multiple cards? Because I know you don't have 140 gig card and you only have a 60, so you can't record two memory cards at once. So was there any stage on your trip that you kind of backed up your pictures, or were, if you did have them like on the one card, were you ever in fear of losing them or something happening?
Good question. But I had multiple things, Dad. So the photographs were probably the smallest amount of the file size data that would have been used. On the G7X, I filled a 32 gig card. On the GoPro, I filled a 32 gig card. And drone, I probably did around about 12 or 16 gig. And then I had audio. And then I had also the secondary cards that I put in. So the photographs would have been the smallest amount of it, but I had no backup.
Okay.
Because I don't... If I'd lost it, I'd lost it. If I have it, that's great, you know. It wouldn't have been the end of the world. There was no point in me sweating about it. I've never lost anything yet in all the years that I've been doing it.
Touch wood.
Touch wood, yeah, exactly. But look, it can happen, you know.
Yes.
And I also had 2 gig as well of voice. So there was quite a lot, you know. But all in all, I think out of it, I probably would have recorded around 12 episodes of my vlog, which is going to keep me busy for a very, very long time. And when I first got back, actually, it was, you know, the usual stuff. I don't know about you guys, but my process is when I get back is I dump everything straight away. So I get the cards in and I import everything and I put it into my files and my folders and my drive that will back up that drive as well. So like when I get back, I have it all done. But I get it all organized so that I've got each of the locations then that are done. So wherever I went to, I dropped in all the photographs, all the audio, all the video. So I can just take all that and just bang, make one episode in regards to it. But that's going to be a lot of work for me to do. But it's going to be great to be able to relive it as well.
You will enjoy doing it because it's almost like you're reliving the trip that you were so lucky to do in the first place. What I would be thinking.
Yeah, you're dead right. And actually, once I got everything dumped on, I couldn't start. I couldn't stop myself starting. So I actually did a 30-second clip of a number of the different areas that I wanted to put in it, because what I want to do with this one is have it as a rolling or repeating 30 seconds at the start of every
episode. Little intro.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what I did with there then is I just did that, and then I just threw coming soon on the end of it. I actually might put it up in the group and see what people think of it. Because it gives a good summary in regards to where it was at. You never know. You never know.
You might like it. But, might like it.
Yeah, enough about me anyway. I'm talking too long in relation to it. You know, Dad's already been asleep. I hope none of the listeners have actually fallen asleep. And John was the one that said he was most likely to fall asleep. So, yeah.
And you know, I actually woke up a lot during that, Darren. There you go. That's a compliment.
Thanks very much. Hopefully nobody fell asleep other than Dad, anyway, because if people are listening to this while they're driving and they fall asleep, then we're all in trouble. Yeah, so listen, that was me for the last 2 weeks. And yeah, it was fun. Good, I suppose, to recap in relation to it.
Yeah.
We'll end this section here now, I think, and we'll move to a word from our sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast. I'm Darren in the hot seat tonight, and I'm still here with my two boys, John and Dodd. And I want to have, I suppose, a good conversation really with the two of you guys, because it's something, like I said, that topic was given to me by one of our listeners, Rodney, and the moment he said it to me, I thought it could be very interesting for us to discuss. But I think it also could be very interesting for our listeners as well to discuss, and it's that photography. Some people view it as a hobby. Some people view it as their passion. Or for other people, it's an obsession. Or some people think it's their hobby, when in actual fact, it's their obsession. And I kind of want to get into it a bit further and see what your thoughts are, because, you know, from my point of view, I shoot, as you know, landscape. I said it a couple of times, I'm a one-trick pony. You know, Dermot, you seem to do quite a lot in photography. It's in your life, both on a pastime and a business point of view. And, you know, John, I mean, you're passionate in relation to photography, but it's not your everyday. I mean, you know, you've got your hockey and everything else as well. So I kind of was thinking about it and saying, okay, from the three of us, we've three different types in regards to it. I mean, I know that for me, I'm probably borderline obsession, even though I know that it's not everything that I do, but I love it so much. But I'll give you a couple of things to think about here, right? So if we start from a hobbyist, what would be your thoughts in regards to a hobbyist? What would a hobbyist be?
I suppose a hobby to me would be somebody who just goes out and shoots every now and then, or just looks forward to going out at the weekend, but maybe not plan it or do all the detail and the planning that somebody more passionate would do, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does, yeah. It does.
Maybe also when it comes down to gear as well, they might have the basic camera. They might even go out with their phone just because they're taking photographs, but they may not have gone off and spent a fortune on a good camera, be it a good crop camera, crop frame or a full frame camera, and their filters and so on, and they might have a basic tripod, just enough to get a shot off. But, you know, what do you think, Dad?
Okay, right. The hobbyist can be, right, it's very, very debatable, okay? Now, when I was in the camera club, Limerick Camera Club, it kind of opened my eyes to what a hobbyist would be. So you've, and for some strange reason, I find, and this, I'm not bringing ageism into this or anything like that, elderly people seem to be more hobbyist photographers more than anything else. Like I said, when I was in camera club, the elder people inside there would see photography as a hobby, whereas other people, the younger people, for some strange reason, I don't know why, I could be totally wrong, seemed more obsessed about it than elderly people. Maybe it's just the time that they were brought up in and so on, they appreciate things a lot more than younger people would now. I don't know. I'm going way off topic. I am on topic. It's just, I see things differently than other people. I see dead people.
Come here. I'm supposed to be the one that's controversial on this show. You know what I mean? Not you. Now all of a sudden you're being ageist.
Darren, you just took away from me. I was going to say I disagree with you.
What's about change? I took something away from you, John. Yeah. Wow.
I was going to jump in there and say that, I know a lot of people who would be, I don't know, I'm not going to say an age for an elderly person, but would be a lot older than me, And I would actually say they're actually obsession. There's an obsession there.
Well, don't get me wrong. That's yes. Yeah. See, this is kind of an outlier of a topic. Like there is young people who are hobbyists as well, but I just find this the majority of hobbyists would be older. John, what
of camera
Darren,
clubs?
Darren, what you think?
Is that what you meant?
No. Okay, well, no. The majority of people who are elderly that are into photography would be more hobbyist photographers compared to younger people.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, okay. I mean, I had notes here at the beginning of it, like, and you know, they're kind of gone by the wayside now, I suppose, really. But the one thing I would say to you is that from a hobbyist point of view, it's somebody, they do it in their free time. It's not going to be, I'm going to go take photos next Saturday. It's, I have an afternoon, I bring the camera with me, I'm going out for a walk with the wife or the husband or whatever it may have been. I'll take some photographs of the kids. Every so often I have the camera, but I don't use it every week. You use it every so often. Be it that if they're in a club, then they're some way passionate in relation to it. It's about taking that loose hobby into something that they want to bring to the next level in relation to it. I think they're some way competent in regards to taking photos, but sometimes they're not able to capture the shot dependent on the conditions that they're in. And the final one that I had there, I suppose, really, is that, you know, if they have it at all, because a lot of people who are hobbyists in photography don't have a tripod, because they may not necessarily feel the need to having a tripod. But if they do have it, they'll have one tripod. And that's something that, you know, a hobby, it doesn't get in the way of their life. Their life, they live their life, and every so often, if they can get out and take a photo, they'll go out and take a photo. That's what I think in regards to
it's fun for them, a
hobbyist point of view. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
I'd agree on that, but I also think you could go as far as saying that that can be a somebody of any age.
Well, we know that. That's just Dad trying to be controversial. Yeah. He's trying to hit the ratings there for this week. Fair play to you. But the next part then, I suppose, from that is, from a hobby, does it move on then to a passion, you know? So, I mean, look, I'll give you my thoughts in regards to what I think from a passion. You can share your thoughts then. Share that, John. Your thoughts on it, okay? So, from a passion, you love it. You live for it. You enjoy every moment when you can get out. You're passionate in relation to your photography. Got some good gear. You've got a good enough body or a good enough set of lenses, but you don't have the top gear. You still have some basic gear left from your hobbyist days, but you've upgraded now as well, and you now have two tripods. Because the first tripod that you bought, which was a hobbyist tripod, wasn't good enough, so you had to get a bit of better gear. So you, at this point, you still suffer from a small bit of gas as well, you know. That's what I think when you're passionate in regards to photography. What do you think? John, you can go first.
The first thing I was going to say there then is that well, if a hobbyist has one tripod and passion has two, I'm sure you're going to say an obsession has three. Three tripods. Would that be correct?
I don't know. You'd have to wait and see.
You'd have to wait and see.
I have three.
Well, I would, because you three. Well, you've got more than everything. You're gone beyond obsession. You're what's the word? An addict.
Yeah.
I would say passion. Yeah, I would be a passionate photographer. I plan my images. I plan my photography, but I don't get out as much as I'd like to get out. Things get in the way. So therefore, I wouldn't consider myself being an obsessive photographer. But I do have two tripods. Is that what you said, Darren? Somebody might have two tripods. I actually have two. One put in the box. Could actually try and sell that in the podcast as well. I have two cameras. I got a bag full of filters. I have got more lenses than I need. And I don't get out and use them as much as I'd like to use them. So yes, I am a passionate photographer who would like to get out more.
What about you, Darren?
Okay, the passionate photographer is where most people will be in the photographic industry. Most people that are in photography are passionate users. The majority of the people in camera clubs all over the country are passionate photographers. They have a camera body, they probably have upgraded, like you said, and even the way you said passionate, Darren, just shows, like, the way you just said it is passionate. You know, you are, how do I explain this? Oh my God. You're passionate about saying passionate. do you get me?
Passionate photographers,
there's a lot of them in the country, and they're very eager to learn. They're the type of person who would watch the odd YouTube clip to do this, or to talk to someone else and kind of pick their brain about this. But they'd be very close to becoming they're very, very near to becoming obsessive, because that's the thing with photography. There is a bug out there, and a lot of people get bitten by this bug, and it will move you on so fast in photography. It's unreal. Like, speaking from my own point of view, I came in as a novice, or what you call it, a beginner.
A hobbyist,
and that lasted me all of 2.5 months before I upgraded my camera almost immediately. Like, so, like I said, that bug hit me bad, pretty bad, and look where it's got me today, you know. But I'm happy where it got me today, you know. It's got me a lot of things in life, and you know, I am where I am today because of that bug.
And I think, you know, it kind of dovetails nicely into the last point of it then, which is the obsession. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, you know. If you're obsessive about something, it doesn't... Sometimes you have a connotation that it's, oh, yeah, Jesus God, I can't think of anything else. But you could be so passionate about it that it can become an obsession. But that obsession can get in the way of your life. Because you think, you live, you breathe photography. Your world revolves around photography. When you're walking around the place from a landscape point of view, you're looking at the light, you're looking at the clouds. All you're thinking about is, how can I take a photograph of that? You have the camera constantly with you. Everywhere you go, everything is a photograph. You know, you're 100% bought in regards to it. You've the best of gear, you've the best of filters, you've got, you know, your old stuff. You still have it for sentimental sake, but you never use it. You might have two camera bodies, because just in case one breaks. And more importantly, I think, you've three tripods.
I was waiting for it.
But also as well, you know, the person who's passionate about photography and the person who's photography is an obsession, they'll also be taking it another step further and wanting to learn more. And as you say, you know, someone who's passionate wants to learn, they're open to watching YouTubes and stuff like that, but they're also going to be going on a lot more workshops, and you're going to have somebody who's going to go on every opportunity that they can to take photos, because I know from a landscape point of view it can be extremely addictive. But if you're also doing that and you're working in the industry as well, like you are, Dad, you know, everything about that you do at the moment is photography. Okay, it's not right now because you've got scuba diving, which is a new hobby, but you're also straight away have leapfrogged right through to the passionate obsessive in regards to that, because you're tying it in with your photography already. And that's what I mean about, you know, it's an obsession that it's in, as if it's in your DNA, as if it's in your blood. That's my thoughts in regards to it. What about you, Dad? You can go first in this one.
Yeah, like I was talking in the last part of the passionate, I really dovetailed into obsessive very, very fast. And I know I'm obsessed with photography. That's all I think about all the time. I'm being serious about that. I actually have a problem about thinking about this all the time and trying to, how do I make myself better? Like, I wake up in the morning and the first thing I do, and I should really try and stop, is immediately I reach my phone and I check adverts first and foremost, because I would have bidded on something the night before.
Gas!
You know, and to see if someone has accepted my bid, because, like, I lowball anyone I can, you know? And it's hard, because if someone lowballed at me, I'd tell them F off or something, you know? But come here, it works every now and again. But moving on swiftly. And then I'll check my emails, my work emails, you know, which is photography related. I check my Facebook to see if he sent me anything stupid over the night and so on. And then I go on with my day. I come down to my office and I start editing images for clients to do this, to do that. I'll check a YouTube video just because cats or dogs, just to break up the day a bit. And then I go about the rest of my day and do other things. But that night then I come back to the office and I do more work. And I watch more YouTube videos to make myself better, because you have to evolve as a photographer. You have to be doing new things constantly and reinventing yourself also, which is, see, the way I'm even talking about this, I'm obsessed. You know, I'm obsessed by it already. And from me, from my point of view, I am obsessed, but it doesn't cause me any problems, which I'm lucky, because my wife, she's absolutely fantastic. She supports me in every way possible. She only wants the best for me, and I love her so much for that. But, like, I'm the lucky one. Some other people aren't so lucky, and they'd be obsessed, and it causes problems in their marital life, and problems with kids and whatever. and it's just not good for some people. And I think you should be very self-aware of how you do things. And like myself, I need to cut back on some things. I really do, because I try take photography into everything I do. Workshops, like I said, scuba diving, landscape photography. Any chance I can get, I want to bring my camera to do it. Otherwise, I wouldn't sulk, but I wouldn't be too happy to be there.
Yeah, you kind of feel as if your arm was missing if you didn't have a camera near to you.
Yeah, yeah. John, what do you think?
Yeah, do you know what? I could sit here and repeat all that and sound like a parrot, so I'm not going to. I'm just going to agree with Bodhi and leave it at that. Well done.
Well, it'd be interesting to think, right, what our listeners think. So what I might do on the group there is I'll put up a poll and, you know, we'll put the three in regards to it. And people can just say, okay, where do they think they are? Come here. Yeah, look, we'll put it up in the group there and we'll see what the listeners think of it and the members, the great members actually in the group, because the group is going very, very well. And I'm really enjoying the interaction there from everybody. So, yeah, that was a good topic, guys, you know. Good bit of insight, I suppose, from all three of us. Before we move on to the final segment, now I just want to take one break from word from our sponsors.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back to the final segment there of this week's episode. And what I'd like to talk about here is our usual segment, which is our VSP. So that's our very solid product. And this week for me, it's a product that I've used pretty much religiously since I've gotten it. I've very rarely had an issue with it except for my own user error. So it's a really solid product from what it does when I don't make a mistake with it.
Excuse the pun.
And I think, yes, and I do think that it's a product actually that all three of us have, I think. It's an external audio recorder. It's a Zoom H1. Do you have you got one of those?
Yep.
Okay, so that'll be interesting though, because the three of us can talk, I suppose, in regards to it. And also, you know, Dad, you had an idea there around six episodes ago for us to give a rating or a figure. This is one actually now that we can all give a rating and a figure to because we all use it.
Yes. Cool. Yes.
That'd be good. So, what the Zoom H1 is it's an external audio recorder, and I use it from my vlogging point of view, and it's really, really good from the quality of the audio because it has a 90-degree X and Y stereo mic. So what that means is that they're both crossing. There's two microphones. Instead of them both pointing straight towards each other, they cross over each other, so they give a wider field of recording. And it's really, really good. It's a small handheld unit. It's about the size of a small TV remote control, so it can sit in your pocket. And it can record directly onto the unit. It has an SD card in it. You have pretty much studio quality recording. And one simple little button on the top of it, you press record to start, you press record to stop. You do have a lot of little other buttons that are on the side of it, but just from the ease of use, when you want to record and you want to know that you're recording, there's an LCD screen. It's backlit. You press the button, it shows you that you're recording. And on top of that then as well, it also has a line in, so you can put in an external mic into it. So any type of mic that has a 3mm jack, you can plug into that. So I know I've used it for my lav mic, which connects onto my lapel. This thing goes into my pocket. It allows me to be able to record, and the reason I have it is because the Canon G7X Mark II that I use to record my vlogs doesn't have an internal jack for a mic. I can't record other than the built-in microphone that's there. But moreover, this allows me as well to get away from the camera as opposed to being tied to the camera by a cable. You know, so it's really, really good from that point of view. Now, I haven't had much issue with it, except for one time, actually, which was funny, when I was in Kerry and I was meeting with a guy called Pascal Cross. He's another YouTuber, and I wanted to record a video with him, and he was slagging me on the video, saying, you know, Mr. Spoonley has to use this thing. Can you believe he has to speak into it and everything else? And the ironic thing about it was I'd never pressed record. Even recording in regards to it. So that's the only time I've ever had an issue with it, other than, like I say, my own user error where that was the lav mic. In a couple of episodes, I put the lav mic up on my lapel of my soft shell jacket. So every time I moved, So it was the jacket that was making the noise as opposed to the wind, but it was a pain in the backside. So that's why I like it because it's really good when it does work. And when I'm using it in for making my videos, it's just simple. I just pop in the audio track. I know it's going to be good quality and it works. What are your thoughts on it, Dermot?
Well, I love it. And one thing you left out there, Darren, and I think the listeners should know, that if you use the Rode lav mic as a small mic, you don't you have to get an adapter?
You do, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
It's an SC3, I think, is the adapter number.
Okay. I don't have it. I remember you saying that you had to get one, so it'd be good for the listeners to know that.
Yeah. For the lav mic, because I have the smartphone version of the lav mic, but if you get an ordinary lav mic, it'll plug straight in. Or the Rode Video Mic Pro or the Micro will go straight in as well. They don't need that adapter because your mobile phone is slightly different connecting types. That's why.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually love it, and it gives you some for such a small device, it gives you a nice little few options, like it has record formats, you know, it's got WAV and then it's got MP3, and it's just a little toggle switch there on the back. It's also got the auto levels, which I hope everyone's turning it off, because auto is never really a good thing. John, stop picking your nose. And then you have you have low cut on the back of it, so handy. Also, you have your input levels on the right hand side, play buttons, delete, everything. And it's very a simplistic device, and one of my favorite things about it is, and it's so simple, is that it's got three eighths screw on it, so you can attach it to your GorillaPod if you wanted to, and attach it to something so you're not holding it, or you can have it on a mic stand and that you can use it for, so you're not hand holding the device if you want to use it. And I think it's very good if the three of us could do a podcast with this little device. I brought this to Dublin and I didn't have my own headphones, so I didn't know if it's peaking or not. I couldn't see. I think I just got too excited at times, and when I was doing the podcast with people, I was holding too close to myself, so I was peaking, but my interviewees were perfect. The audio was fantastic, and that was in a very noisy atmosphere, and it came out tops, except for myself, obviously. But I don't matter. It's my my guests that matter. I love my guests.
What about you, John?
I was scratching my nose. I wasn't picking my nose. I don't pick my nose.
Do you eat it after you pick it?
Dad. Ah, stop. Come on.
Sorry.
You can edit that bit out. We'll pause and we'll start. I think you guys have used it an awful lot more than me. I actually find it really, really good. I haven't used it as much as ye. I didn't even know it has all those functions on it. All I knew that it had was a little red button and you press. But on a serious note, the one mistake, Dad, and you just touched on it there, that I found it a little bit hard to get used to when I started, was the peaking. And trying to adjust it, especially, you know, I remember I did do a vlog at one stage, believe it or not, and I thought I had it done great, came home, put the audio in, and I was peaking, and I binned the whole lot of it because it just drove me mad.
Yeah.
So yes, I think I would recommend to anybody when they get it just to get used to the settings and understand the whole how it peaks, and it can peak quite easily as well. Even if you have it set right, you know, you move your microphone, you can close your microphone, you're going to peak again. So do keep your eye on that. That's all I would add to it. Lads, I think we said before, if we all use the same product, that we could give it a bit of a rating. Did we say that?
Yeah. But yeah, we said we could give it a rating anyway. No, I think it's great the fact that we are all using this product, because we can actually give it more of a tested rating, more, I suppose. Because the last one we did, I think, was actually when I did more I'm qualified one, yeah. One thing I would say, right, I suppose, you know, from this unit, and just interestingly enough, we'll give this our rating, but you can't get it anymore.
Oh, really?
There's a new one after coming out now. It's the H1N. So if
is
people
it a
are looking...
though, really?
Well, it's actually, they've changed the design of it. There's a bigger screen. There's a couple of extra buttons, actually, which are on the front as opposed to on the side. There's a bigger speaker by the looks of it, because that's actually one thing we didn't mention, is that there's a speaker built into it, so you can do a review out in the field or wherever you are, just to see did it record. But it has a bigger speaker by the looks of it, and it also has what I think looks like a very handy thing, is your volume. So on this, volume was on the side, but now volume is up on the front, and they've done a good job by the looks of it, because it's a turn dial. so you can just turn the dial very quickly with your thumb.
I'm looking at it.
So it looks completely different, but I think it will be a nice upgrade. And it also seems to have dropped in price. It's down to $99. You hear me? I'm back in Ireland. Back in Ireland, €99.
Well, come here, Darren. Come here. At the end of the day, right? You always talk about shiny. Is it shiny just to get people to buy a new one? At the end of the day, you press that red button, it's still going to record you.
Well, let's put it this way to you. Dad looked and went, oh, yeah, that looks nice. Exactly. I looked at it and I went, oh, that looks nice. It's newer than the one I have.
And I go, nah.
It's newer than the one I have. And it's cheaper than the other one.
Lads, you don't need it, lads. Take it to be deep right there. Come on, let's rate this. Come on.
All right. So look, I'll
rate it 7, okay?
Okay. Dad?
Similar. 7 out of 10, yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. Just to be different.
Okay. The reason why I gave it 7, right? And just a quick, like, it is very, very good audio. It's fantastic. But it's not the best. There is much better out there, and that's why there's other models available. There's better models like the 5. Is there 5 in? There's definitely a 6 in anyway. Because I was actually looking at that there a few weeks ago, because I was thinking again. Yeah.
That's because you can do multiple inputs as well on that, though. So you can input multiple mics and it can act as a recording studio per se, which is a very interesting concept as well. I think these guys make an awesome product, and like I said, the price of this one has come down. So. I think I paid €116 or €129. I can't remember. But this one now, looking online on Barker anyway, is €99. So I imagine in Whelan's and Conn's and Maher's, it would probably be the same if they're selling it. But I just did a quick check here on one of the sites just to get a steer on the price. So listen, that's been my VSP. And for anybody, I suppose, that's looking to record audio, I would really recommend it. And you'd actually get a benefit now of getting the newer version, which obviously is going to be upgraded. Don't tell Dad, because he'll want it, because it's newer. But yeah, that's been my VSP for this week. So lads, I think that's it. I think I've done my part. So we have even a new part. You created a new part to the show when I was away. I was gone for 2 weeks and you changed a new part. What is it, Dad?
Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell's coming on. He's a special guest. When you hear him talk, he's really, really good. You ready? I'll introduce him. And here we have today Will Ferrell coming on to introduce the news on the Irish Photography Podcast. Take it away, Will.
Hey, everybody, come see how good I look. All right, so moving on to our news topics, and we think we have to get a name for this part of the show. So this will be weekly when we don't have special guests. So basically,
don't ask me to put a name anyway, because you just take just a complete and utter piss out of it and put it up as a poll on the group. I'm way in America, Darn. And I'm looking going, oh, Darn. You dirty Darn. Joke.
You deserved it. Really did deserve it.
Mailbag.
Right. You can't deny it.
Okay. Filmbag.
Oh, yeah, that's what I said. Okay, DJI have came out with a new drone yet again. They're after releasing the DJI Phantom RTK. The launch of the Phantom 4 RTK DJI shows that the company is committed to bringing the commercial drone applications to the market that come in smaller packages at lower price. Lower price? I don't think so. The Phantom RTK will retail for €5,700.
What?
Jesus Christ.
Yes. So this
is there pictures?
You'll find them on, just Google it and you'll find them. It looks the exact same as John's Phantom 4, but just like with an aerial on the top of the drone itself, kind of a circular aerial. So
John's Phantom 4 Pro, that's fair to use, that's for sale.
Yes, that's one.
Sorry.
So this drone, it includes the drone, the remote controller, 2 intelligent flight batteries, and charger hubs for all of them, right? Now, there is also a second model, but I don't know exactly the difference between two yet, but that retails for €3,600. So basically, guys, these drones are specially made for people that do mapping. So you get a lot of quantum servers, farmers, buildings that just want to do mapping and are solely dedicated to mapping. So they're the people that will be looking for those drones. And these drones, I think are now available, are coming in available to model heli services in Ennis. So yeah, fair play to DJI to keep on are very innovative and keep coming out with all these new drones. But are they coming out too fast? That's up for you to decide. So moving on, Flickr have decided to
sounds like he's saying Flickr, not Flickr.
Flickr, sorry, Flickr.
Flickr, so they'll bait you up and down the road with your own photos.
So basically, Flickr have attracted attention for all the wrong reasons recently, with the revelation that it will be stopping its free terabyte storage initiative and introducing a 1,000 image cap. If that wasn't all, it would be start deleting users' images as of January 2019 in a bid to reduce them to that limit. So basically, Flickr have capped all their photographs. And also, there used to be a €25 charge for a pro account. They've doubled that to €50 now. It's a bit excessive, guys.
Do you have a Flickr page?
I have a Flickr page, but I don't use it.
How about you, John?
Yeah, I haven't used it in a long time. I guess mine's going to be gone now.
Yeah. Same as that.
Yeah. Wait for this, guys. I think you're going to start drooling now any second. Canon could be about to release a jaw-dropping f1.4 ultra-wide-angle zoom, a 14 to 21mm lens.
Wow. Wow.
Shiny.
Yeah, I'd say.
Astrophotography, here we go.
Yeah. So I don't know whether it's going to be for the RS EOS R system, or is it going to be for the old system?
More than likely will be, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
That's going to be the new wave of what they said. That's where the business is going to evolve into those formats. So I imagine anything new now is going to start from that.
Yeah. They're going to start drip feeding them in now.
Yeah. Normally, I wouldn't say the rumors in the news section, but this kind of caught my attention during the week. So I said I'd have to put that in there. Moving on, Loupedeck have now just released the Plus model. We only talked about it with Richie Hatch there last week. He was telling us about a console. Loupedeck have finally released the Loupedeck Plus, and that is shipping worldwide for €229 on the website. With the Loupedeck Pro, whether you're a pro or beginner, achieving the perfect edit quickly becomes second nature with the Loupedeck's Plus initiative buttons, dials, and sliders. You'll have a faster editing, enhanced workflow, customizing control, so you can get really confident and get really creative with the Loupedeck Plus. And also, Julie Corcoran was on to me during the week and has invited us up to do a podcast from the Irish Photographic Federation's Photographer of the Year and Nature Photographer of the Year 2019. And that is going to, the finals will be taking place on the weekend of the 16th and the 17th in February 2019 in the Talbot Hotel in Carlow. So we'll be looking forward to that. Also, remember, there will be regional qualifier rounds being held in January. If you log on to IPF Photographic website, there'll be more details on there, and they have some fantastic prizes generously donated by Frametastic and One Photographic and Nice Light and so on and so forth. And Canon have also donated an M50 mirrorless camera also. So that's something to look forward for all the people in the camera club side of things. Oh, one last thing. Portrait Pro 18 AI has been released. Portrait Pro's 18 new AI powered processing makes editing your images easier. The new technology makes image recognition more accurate than ever before, which means less manual input for you. The software automatically detects the face and feature shapes and uses this to apply presets or manual edits exactly where you need them. This keeps the results natural and professional looking without the time-consuming adjustments required by other editing softwares. So that's the news for this week, guys. Stay classy, San Diego. Good luck.
There's your sound effect. All right, listen, that was interesting, actually. I can't wait to go to that show. That'll be in February, you said, yeah? So that'll be an interesting one for us, because I've always looked at those photos in awe. So, yeah, that's nice to be invited to that. That's good. Thanks very much. That's the end of this week. Jeez, that time flew. Hope it flew for the listeners. Didn't fall asleep like Dad did. But, that's my turn in the chair. I think it was a good episode, lads. It was a couple of interesting topics there. And we'll have to go, I suppose, really, won't we? We can't keep talking forever.
Cheers, Darren. Really enjoyed that. And looking forward. Will you share a couple of your images from your trip on Facebook?
I will, yeah. I'll drop that 30-second clip that I did. And, we'll see then once I get managed to have a look at them. You know what I mean? So, thanks, guys.
Hey-o.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.